approaching the quarter pole of the National Hockey League season. A little bonus episode for you. Darren Millard and John Shannon catching up.
I love these bonus episodes.
Why can't I get through an intro?
Because
if I did that on the air and you were producing, you would scream at me.
No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't. I would say that's good interactive. That's good.
You scream. You're a yeller.
That's not fair. You never worked with me. You never worked with me. Only as a commentator.
That reporter show I did.
Did I ask you actually invite you on that show?
I was a semi-regular there for
you
a while.
You were not a semi-regular. I didn't remember you.
We got Scott Arneil coming on today.
Oh, good.
Winnipeg's one of those teams. There's two in the National Hockey League that if you're going to work for them, you have to have certain qualifications. History. Montreal, Francophone. And Winnipeg, there has to be some history in and around Manitoba.
Yeah, yes and no. I think a lot of people have assumed that, and it seems to occur a lot. But, you know, Kevin Cheveldayoff, before he got the manager's job, didn't have anything to do with Winnipeg, did he really? I mean, he's a Saskatoon boy, isn't he?
But he played in Brandon. It was a Manitoban.
So we're bringing out the Brandon card again, are we?
Craig Heisinger, Winnipeg, like it runs deep. The roots run deep.
Well,
now you're on my side. Now you're figuring it out.
No, I've always thought. I was always surprised, though. It was fascinating after Rick Bowness decided to retire that they didn't name Scott quickly. They actually took some time, and we know that they interviewed Barry Trotz for the job. But to me, Scott Arneil was the only choice. I mean, it was a seamless transition.
Yeah.
He understood the DNA of this hockey club being beside Bowness for 2 years. In fact, coached a couple of times when Rick went through some health issues and Judy went through some health issues. And so from that perspective, you know, Scott should have been named the day that, in my opinion, Rick retired. And it's worked out really well.
It was going to cost Barry too many tickets from people coming down from Dauphin.
I guess.
That was the other thing.
But I tell you what, you know, you talk about connections. There are so many connections with other players. The fact that Scott was a former Jet, the fact that he was a teammate of Dale Hawerchuk's, not just in Winnipeg, but back in junior hockey. I mean, it really is... It's a good story to have Scott Arneil back as a head coach in the National League, because I think there's probably a time in his life that he didn't think he was going to get another job.
Yeah, went a while.
But a dozen years, I think.
He's different now, and I'm curious where he thinks he's different. But I got a bone to pick with him. We'll get into that.
Okay.
Gonna call that. It's on my chest for a while, and I finally get a chance to have the conversation with him.
Oh, my God.
All right. Scotty Arneil coming up on 100% Hockey
Bonus.
With Millard and Shannon.
Bonus
Enjoy.
Edition.
Enjoy. Once again, I can't get the words out.
NHL TV is now on DAZN. Hockey lives here.
Here we go.
Watch every game from every team. The best players in the world. And the coldest plays on ice. Watch up to 4 games at once for the ultimate NHL experience. Sign up now at DAZN.
First thing I do every time I talk to a Manitoban, Scott, is...
Oh, my God. Do I have to go through this again?
Go on. I just want to know, like, how's the weather? That's what I want to know.
Beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful. 5 Celsius. Love it.
That's pretty good for this time of the year.
Yeah, no snow. No, it's actually nice.
Do you have Manitoba in your blood now?
Yeah, I am. I'm a landed immigrant now. I've been here long enough. Came here in 81, off and on. Kind of been home base for the year. So I don't want my family in Kingston to hear that too loud, but it really has become second home.
Right, you're part of the Kingston Mafia. I mean, holy smokes, you're on a long list of guys from that town.
Yeah, there was a few. There's been a few over the years that come out of there.
Sure. You and Gilmore and Muller and all the boys.
Yeah.
Who did you on? Were you on that Cornwall team with Gilmore?
Yeah. So the first year was Howard, Chuck, and I. You know, that was Mark Crawford.
Right.
Who else? That then the second year Gilmore came. He was on the second. He was our third line checking centerman.
So. Well, that, you said you stick with a kid, you'll do okay.
Yeah, hang in there, you'll be all right.
Yeah. Lots of coaches came out of that group then. What the heck's going on?
Yeah, well, actually, we had Doug Carpenter. And then after our first cup in training camp, he left and went and took the job in New Brunswick, Toronto Maple Leafs farm team. And we got Bob Kilger, who had just retired as a referee.
Right.
And he's from Cornwall. And he ended up, our owner said, hey, you ever coached before? And I think he kind of said yes, just to get himself an opportunity. And you know what? He jumped in and won the World Cup with him as well. So, yeah, there's been Orville Tessier was there before us and after us. You know, Crow was a coach there. So, yeah, lots of guys have gone through there.
Okay, hold on. I got to peel back the onion here. Carpenter left in training camp?
Yeah, just at the start of training camp, yeah. I don't know why the Leafs hadn't had a coach for New Brunswick, but –
yeah.
At the last second, he took a job, and we were in scramble mode. And we had already we were the defending World Cup champs, and we had a really good team. Like, we knew we were going to be good, and we just needed, and no disrespect to Bob, but we needed somebody to open the doors. We just it was a good team. It was a really good team. So
what are you actually thinking? And be as honest as you can with this. You've got a guy who's a former ref who's going to be your coach. What's running through your head?
Yeah, I mean, we're kids back then. It's just let us play. Just let us play. And you know what, Bob, he was good. Bob is a good person, and he, you know, he did a good job, and he learned fast. I'll tell you, he learned fast. And honestly, we had such a good team. It was just try to stay out of the way. And you know what, we found our way through it, and then went on for success. So he did well.
Coaching's a lot more complicated now, right?
Oh, it's way more now.
Way more.
There is a lot of open the door and get out of the way, though, too.
You almost need a university education to do the job now, man, you know?
Or a psychology degree for sure.
So, just to finish up the Cornwall Howard Chuck discussion, what's it like when you walk by the statue?
Yeah, I drive by it every single day. I go downtown, and so there's a little nod. There's sometimes we're talking back and forth. It's kind of a one-way conversation now, but it is still special. I'm so happy that it was done before he passed, and we had a chance to talk about it. And he's the one that told me that it was going to happen, and so it's special. It's special for all the Jet fans, people that got a chance to watch him, even those that didn't, just to. To have that memory, you know, of all the things that he's done, what he did for this organization, for the city and the province. And for me as a, you know, as a close, close friend, it's, you know, he's always there.
What have you learned about the opening quarter of the National Hockey League season?
Injuries. Everybody. It's unbelievable. We can all say that, you know, we've been hit the hardest, but at the end of the day, you just look around the league and I'd like to say it's, you know, because of the schedule, but we haven't even got into it really. And now, mm-hmm. now it's the heavy lifting is coming through December, January. So, it's just the biggest thing for me is that, and it's happened to a lot of teams, but it's allowed a lot of teams to stay in the mix. You know, if everybody kind of stays healthy, it kind of, the separation starts to happen, you know, the 20 game mark, 25 game mark. But it's a little off kilter right now with so many injuries to each and every team.
And do you have a theory?
What's that?
Do you have a theory? Because we look and go, well, the game's not near as dirty and rough and tough as it was before. So what's causing the injuries?
I think it's the new dress code the players have. So I don't know. I have no idea. Honestly, we talked about it because the next year is the shortened training camp and no testing and only four exhibition games. So you'd think next year would be it, but it's hit everybody this year. It's hit everybody this year. So I'm really not sure why.
I'm going to actually steal that one, Scott, just for the record. Okay. I think that's a good one. We're going to blame the dress code. I think that, I think that's, that makes a ton of sense. Comparisons from this season for your team to last season, are they fair? I mean, you were 15-1 last year.
Yeah, after 16 games. The biggest thing for me, and what I've said when I've been asked this question, is that we came out of training camp last year. All our lines were in pretty much intact from the year before. Our defense, our goaltending, everything. We weren't hurt. We had no summer surgeries. We had nobody that was, you know, late to the party, kind of starting the season. We came out of the gate rolling, and it was our pretty much our group from the year past, and it allowed cohesiveness. We got off to a great start, you know, and just rolled from there. This year, not having Lowry, Sandberg, Perfetti to start, and then we lost Nyquist, then we lost Barron. You know, there was lots of things that started to sort of snowball, and it really kind of threw our lines out of whack. It sort of the new guys, we had seven new guys that we also brought in, which was different for us. And it was when those guys were trying to learn our system and how we play, we still hadn't had our full lineup together. So last night was as close as we've been all year long. And, you know, really great to see that. Fleury is the only guy we're missing right now. But at the end of the day, that's like I mentioned earlier, everybody goes through it. But to me, those are the big things why last year, the 15-1, and this year, you know, sitting out, we're 12-7. So it's a work in progress.
What did you like about your team last night?
You know what? I like our depth now. Like we're a big, heavy team. I think that we've got experience. I really like down through the middle of the ice with, you know, we've got, you know, Scheifele, Taves, Lowry, and Barron. You know, if I had four lines last night, you know, we had a tough road trip in the sense of the games we played, but also the travel we had, especially around. We had some plane trouble. We had some late nights. Wasn't sure how that game was going to go. We got home at 3 o'clock in the morning from Calgary after Saturday night, Sunday morning. I got to play four lines last night, and it really, really helped a lot. And I know Columbus came in off a game in against Montreal the night before, but at the end of the day, it allowed us to play a four line game, everybody rolling and kind of in waves. And that was a lot of us last year. We got to roll at teams, and we got them on their heels, and we never let them off. And I thought last night it was as close to a 60-minute performance by us that we were looking for.
Actually, the amazing thing is that the guys that have come back from injury, Lowry, Sandberg, Perfetti, you know, you've played them a lot. Yeah, they haven't had that, you know, we're going to play 11 minutes or 12 minutes. Yeah. I mean, the first two nights, Sandberg was in the 20s.
Yeah, well, the big thing, the difference probably between October, November, bringing guys back from injury, and, you know, January, February, March, the thing you're allowed, you can do is that, one, you can take an extra few days to make sure, or however it is, an extra week, that they're in top shape. And that's what I always talk about with our group, our medical staff, that when they get cleared to practice without that yellow jersey on, now it's like, how hard can they go? And when we put them in, that's what I want. I want to make sure that they can do 15 minutes as a forward, or 20 minutes, or 22 minutes as a defenseman. And the other side of it, it's early and I can do it, and that's the fastest way to get them up to speed. You know, as long as there's no fear of the re-injuring, because we're making sure that they're 100% coming back, because we're looking at the long picture. And that, just to me, giving those guys reps and getting them playing, putting them in situations that, you know, they constantly do it, then they're right back in and playing the way they need to.
Scott O'Neill is with us on the 100% Hockey Podcast with Millard and Shannon. Let's take a break and we'll come back and dig into a couple of players in particular and some Winnipeg talk as we roll on the podcast.
Winnipeg talk. You guys are Manitoba. Unbelievable.
Where do you hang out? Gordon?
Me?
Yeah.
No. Gordon's kind of, it's quieted down quite a bit. You know what? Since I became the head gigger, I haven't got a. We have a couple local places by us here in Linda Woods, but
okay.
Yeah.
Too busy. Gordon's quieted down. Red Cactus was always my favorite place.
You know what? Anywhere, actually, River Heights, there are obviously.
Yeah.
You go down on Academy now. You know, you got all those Gusto and all those around down there.
Yeah.
They're all nice. Like there's a few different spots. Bellissimo is my place, so that's right around the corner from me here. So.
By the way, Darren works for the tourist board.
No, I was a River Heights guy, like off McMillan there. It's great.
Old goalie.
You talked about since you become the head coach, Was there a time after your stint in Columbus that you never thought you'd get another head coaching job?
Yeah. I mean, there was, it did sort of drag on me later on. You know, I think it ended up being 12 years. There was different areas or different times where it was like, man, you know, maybe this is what I'm going to do. I'm just going to be an assistant coach for the rest of it, which was, I'm more than happy to do. And I mean, things have a way of working themselves out. I got to work with some great coaches as I was kind of rebuilding my brand. And you know what? It, you know, stayed patient and, you know, this happened to work out perfect. I never, you know, dreamed that it would work out back in Winnipeg where I started. And, you know, just everything kind of, the cards kind of laid out in front of me and it just, they all fell into place.
When you're going through the interview process a few different times, do you tweak it? Do you think that might be some of it? Does that get into your head at all?
Yeah, it does. There is a lot of that. This business is a lot about who you know and sometimes who you've worked with and the relationships that you've built. But I've tried some different things. I've talked to a lot of coaches. I've had a lot of interviews over the years. And you ask me, you know, you follow up after you don't get the job and check in with some general managers and ask them their opinion on maybe why they didn't hire you or what it may be. And at the end of the day, it's just all you can't get too upset about it. You just have to, you know, rebrand and rebuild and, you know, learn and listen. And that's the biggest thing, is just kind of get yourself for that next opportunity. Make sure you're ready.
How much different a coach are you from Columbus to Winnipeg now? I mean, obviously, 12 years is a long time, but, and you were able to file away some information from, as you said, some pretty good coaches, but what is your approach that much different?
Oh yeah. Yeah, it is a lot different. I think that, when I was younger, you think you have the answers, a little bit of the old school style of coaching, kind of the guys I had worked with before. So it was recognizing that the game has changed. And as a coach, this game changes every 3-4 years, whether that's how you defend, however, you know, your power plays, penalty kill, different things. It trends and it kind of, you got to stay on top of that. And for me, you know, being a young guy thinking I had all the answers, it didn't work. And so I kind of had to redo that and, you know, listen to some people, listen to some great coaches. You know, so at the end of the day, it was really trying to kind of take the best of sort of the people I had worked with. And, you know, unfortunate that Rick got sick and Judy, his wife, got sick, but it also got me on the bench for, you know, for 2 years. I coached here with the Jets as a, you know, stepping in for Rick when he's away. And it helped me to kind of, you know, sort of feel confident about what I was trying to do. And it wasn't like I just had to come in and the very first day it was brand new to me. And that certainly helped the transition last year and to this year.
So what were you trying to do? Can you expand on that?
Trying to do when I came in here?
Yeah. Like when you say confidence that you were.
Yeah. Number one is the relationship. The relationship building that you have to do with these players. That's these kids nowadays, these players nowadays, even guys, veteran guys that are around. You have to have relationships. And when I first came in as a coach back then, it was really, you were the boss. You do it my way or the highway. And that has changed so much over the last 5, 8, 10 years. And, you know, at the end of the day, if the players, you know, believe in you, believe in what you're preaching, what you're talking about and how you want to go about your business, they're going to play for you. And that's kind of what I've tried to do. And, you know, try to, as much as possible, always be on this, you know, the same page, talking to these guys, finding out about their families, their personal lives, all those type of things, and making sure that I care about them and my staff cares about them. You know, the strategy side of things is, you watch teams win, you watch teams have success. And, you know, there's certain ways you go about things that you think that will have success when you go out and play. And the one big one for me is, you know, is defending. It's, you defend first. If you do it in the NHL, you give yourself a great chance of having success through the regular season. And you have a great chance of getting yourself into the Stanley Cup playoffs.
I'm curious, you talked about this being a league that you know people, and yet your staff, you didn't really know Dean or Davis, did you?
Never worked. Obviously, never worked with them. But at the end of the day, we spend time together at different coaching seminars through our coaches association, maybe. But for me, Davis, it was interesting. It kind of goes back a bit. But when I got let go by Columbus, Vancouver, Lauren Henning, who was assistant GM, asked me if I would do some scouting, pre-scouting for NAV, who I'd worked with, had a relationship with Alain Vigneault. Asked me if I pre-scout them because it was near the end of the year for them. They weren't sure who they were going to play. That was the year LA, came in and had all those game sevens and won the Stanley Cup. That I went out and I was scouting, and the guy I kept running into in all the buildings who had also just been fired was Davis Payne, who was coaching in St. Louis. We ended up being in the same building. So we went for dinner a few times. We went out for beer, just talking, kind of got to know each other. And then over the years kind of followed up. And you know what, last year, when I got hired and, when I became the head coach of the Jets, I made it a priority. That was the number one thing that I was going to make sure that I went out. And I obviously Chevy and Mark Chipman, the owner, that it may take us and we have to pay a little bit more money or do something a little bit different. But I was pushing hard, and it was tough because there were six or seven teams that were looking for coaches. And you know what? Those were two guys that became available, and just tried to sweet talk them as best I could. And obviously Dino, I didn't really know real well, but I knew we had experience in the league from Carolina and Toronto, and it worked itself out. And they've been a gigantic help with me, along with Marty Johnson. Those three guys and Wade Flaherty, they've been a big help for me.
How well did you know Jonathan Toews before this year?
Yeah, I ran into him different sort of golf events, seen him around town. Really never sat down and had long conversations with him. It's just kind of friendly, know each other type thing. But our first big conversation, obviously, when we were trying to sign him and I had a long chat. We did have a Zoom call with his agent and Chevy and myself and Chipper. And then I got to we did sign him. My family, my son lives in Minnie, and I went down to visit them. And JT was spending the summer in Minnie. So we went for a thought would be a half an hour coffee. Ended up being a 2.5 hour coffee, and that was really kind of the build a relationship with him. And so now it's he's such a world class person, and obviously a Hall of Fame player, and he's been great for us and great for me. You deal to be around those guys. I've been around a few kind of in Washington and New York, but to have one to coach a guy like this, to be the head coach of a guy like that, it's special.
Well, now the conversations around the game of hockey would be strategy, would be just stories about what it was like in Chicago. I mean, what would you talk about?
It was JT was he had a lot of questions for me. He's extremely nervous, extremely excited. I think it was the middle or the first week of August, if he could have put his blades on that day and went out and started the season, I think he wanted to. But he looks after his body. He trains like crazy. He was just talking about what I thought. What he wanted to know about our team. He wanted to know. He didn't want to disrupt. He had no problem if he started on the fourth line, and all these different things. And he was just like he wanted to just be because it had been so long since he had played a game that he just wanted to fit in and be a part of the group. And I just said that more than anything, just you got to come and be yourself, and all that stuff, and the stuff that you've done in the past, that'll all come forward. And we knew that he had the head, the hands, and the heart. Now it was just about the legs. And he's gradually, you see it now, he's starting to catch up to the pace. He's kind of, the rust is off him, and he's starting to feel more comfortable. It's helped that we've gotten healthy, and he's kind of getting the same line mates each night.
Was there an area of his game that surprised you right away after being out that long?
Well, I'd coached against him, watched him for a long time. Knew he was great on faceoffs. His, I knew there was sort of, we call it puck weight. Him over top of a puck on a puck battle, the guy's trying to get away from how he uses his body, how he uses his hands, how he uses his stick. He's so good at it. And then to watch him in practice do it. Saw him in training camp against some, we were doing a lot of battle drills, and some of the young kids trying to get pucks away from him is kind of comical, but that's the experience that he has. And then the other side for us, the big part for us, is what's between his ears that we've gotten a little taste of. Now that Adam Lowry is back, really, that's really helps our room. But he's the guy that when tough times come, he's a guy that's been through these experiences. And when he speaks, these guys listen. And obviously, they're getting into the playoffs. And, you know, when we can make the playoffs, that's the next stage that he's done it. He's won three times. And that's where we're hoping that, you know, he can help our group.
Just as
I don't know how a guy misses that much time and comes back and is above 60% in the draw. That blows me away.
Yeah, it's his hand-eye coordination is still phenomenal. Like, there's so many categories with JT that you know, you appreciate and you understand why he is what he is, and he's won so many different things on the world stage and obviously in the NHL, that he has all the tools. And you know, it's that there was so much, you know, time away that he was unsure if that was going to work. And you know, I think he's gradually gotten more and more comfortable.
Is there a percentage you can put on where he is, do you think? I mean, is he at 90%? That when you talked about legs, is that's the part that still has to come?
I don't know if it's, I mean, specifically the legs, it's the workload. You know, is it, that's for me, is it 14 minutes? Is it 16 right. minutes? Is it 18 minutes? You know, I know when Chicago came in town, I played him 20 minutes and, you know, he just buried his head and kept jumping over the boards. But at the end of the day, we're a better team when not only him, but the rest of the group, our minutes are a little bit lower and we can roll four lines. But I still haven't quite figured out what makes him tick on the exact minutes, because we haven't been healthy. Now we are, and I can go down that road. The harder, where it gets difficult is when you, and this is coming, is when you start to play 3 and 4 nights, 4 and 6, mm-hmm. you know, 5 and 8. That's the ones where, all right, how good are his legs and how hard can he go?
Just as an observation, the guy that, in my opinion, is going to be the biggest beneficiary of Jonathan Toews is Cole Perfetti.
100%. Cole will become the guy that, you know, that we're hoping. Had a great year last year, a breakout year, stayed healthy for 82 games. And then it's unfortunate that he got hurt in training camp, but on a freak accident. But at the end of the day, he's a hockey nerd, but he's a real heady kid, and he can read Jonathan. Jonathan is such a student, such a smart player, that those two have some chemistry that way. But the other side for me is that Cole's a shooter,
right.
and he can make, that's one thing that you don't want too many playmakers with Jonathan, because that's what he wants to do. And if you think back to his line mates over the years, you know, whether that was Kane or Hossa or different Sharp, those guys, they were shooters, and that's what we're hoping Cole does with him.
Can't believe I'm even going to bring this up in hockey, but have you guys considered load management to when it gets into the?
We'll see. I mean, right now we're not there yet on the on the work, on the crazy workload. But it's coming. It starts at the end of this month for us. It really picks up, and we got a sort of a crazy road trip, come home for one and right back into Edmonton. So those are the ones we're going to kind of see. It's not something he wants to play 82 games. So,
right.
So yeah, I think that has more to do with the minutes than it does the actual games themselves.
The other guy that wants to play 82 minutes is your goaler.
Yeah. Yep. Always.
I always say goaler just because I used to love when Cliff Fletcher called him a goaler. So I thought that was great. But so how does that something that you leave to Wade and Connor, or do you weigh in?
Well, we have conversations about this all the time. We do. Flats and I lay out a monthly calendar, and then we call in comms, Eric Comrie and Helly to come in, and we kind of go over it, and we'll sort of bicker back and forth, and kind of we play it, lay it out that way. Not too often. We usually get, you know, through the, you know, three, usually I get through 3-4 weeks. We're pretty bang on, and then we'll kind of get us, and they'll look at the next stretch of games. And there's been the odd time last year. We were on a pretty good roll last year, but it's usually three on, one off. And if we can kind of stick to that, depends sometimes if you're,
but you changed on this road trip, didn't you?
Did I?
Well, I think you played Connor in Calgary because you needed to
win. Yeah. That was an Arnie swing there. That was me putting my head. I wanted to finish the road trip off. Right. And not that it had anything to do with comms, but I knew that we had that late flight after You know, after Calgary game, and I wanted to finish the trip 2-4. I didn't want to come home 1-5, and not that Combs couldn't have done it. He was fantastic last night, but I just felt we put the big horse in front, and it worked out for us.
How can you tell that Connor is not on board with your discussion when you're talking about goaltenders? Is it a humph? Is it a fidget? How do you know?
No, I just know that he doesn't like, he's not real big on practice, so I know that he likes to play games, so he doesn't want to go long stretches where he's off. That's all.
Yeah, but his definition of long stretches is 2 days.
So, and I don't get into goaltending. I always tell them, I don't know why you don't just, I don't want, I, unless you're doing a two-pad stack, I like it to the old-fashioned two-pad stack. That's about it.
We don't have enough of that in our game.
Oh.
To bring that back, Shifes, we know the emotion of last year, but the way he's come back has been not only inspiring but so productive as well.
Yeah, there's you know, he's driven. He's always been driven. He's been another hockey nerd there in the sense that he lives it, sleeps it. I don't think he's even off the ice over the summer. He's on the ice 5 or 6 days after we're done. You know, maybe we go and win the Stanley Cup and you can stretch that out for him. But at the end of the day, he loves the game and he loves working on his game. Off the ice, he keeps himself in fantastic shape. To me, he's, you know, he's just a guy that loves playing the games. And, you know, obviously there's that, you know, the sort of the carrot sitting out there with Team Canada. In my opinion, I felt he should have been on the team last year, but this year, I hope they really, really consider him because I think he is more than just an offensive player. We've put in a lot on him in the sense that he's worked on his faceoffs. He's done a fantastic job. He's helped us on our penalty kill. And, you know, he's done a, you know, on that, especially on that right side, winning draws in our end of the rink has been big. And he's taken a lot more pride. That's part of been the probably one of the biggest areas for me. Not really knowing Scheif before I came back here 4 years ago, and specifically the last 2 years. His buy-in along with our other top players to play without the puck has helped us as a team, but has helped him individually to be able to play more with the puck and be able to show his offensive skills and talents. And yeah, he's, you watch him in practice, you watch him in games. He does stuff that the elite guys in this league do.
And I think one of the problems with Mark not getting the attention is that what you and Rick were able to do over the last 2-3.5 years changed Mark Scheifele. He's a different player now. And I mean, I can say it, you don't have to say it. He's much more team oriented now than he ever was before.
Yeah. You know what? You know, I think that the leadership side of things, we worked hard as an organization, as a team, as a staff, as players, so that our dressing room was first and foremost that, you know, they were all on the same page, and that's part of what Mark has done a fantastic job with Adam Lowry and Josh Morrissey as our captains, and the rest of our leadership group. And you know what? Again, it goes back to the buy-in. It was just having a simple conversation. Would you rather be using all your energy in your end of the rink, or would you rather use all your energy in the offensive side of the rink? And if you work to get pucks back, that's what we talk about often about defending 200 feet. If you work, you can get the puck back just tracking hard on at the top of the blue line in the offensive zone, or might be in the red line or through the neutral zone. If you bust your tail doing it there, you're back on offense. And then if it happened to be in your end of the rink, the faster you can close, the faster you can defend. You're not spending your whole 45, 50, 55 second shift playing in your end of the rink.
All right. I got a bone to pick with you. All right. This goes back.
Is this that slapper I threw over your shoulder when you when you came out to practice with us there with the moose?
That's right. Oh. You did throw it right over my shoulder.
Don't worry, I didn't forget about that. I did not forget about it. And if you ever went down the road and critiqued my coaching, it was coming out in my back pocket. Slapper, John Slapper under the bar. He was still looking around trying to find out where the puck went.
See, Darren still has this dream, you know, Scott. He still has this dream, you know. Every once in a while when I ask what he's doing, he says, I'm just coming off the ice. I'm going, stop it, you know.
That the big thing about it, because I played till I was 36, I was 36 when I took the shot. He was like 28 or 25, whatever it was. I mean, Gordy Howe scored on him.
And I did go to Boost training camp that year. I can't believe I didn't get that far to get a preseason game. But
please.
I'm Carlisle. I'll never. Who's the coach then?
It was Carlisle, wasn't it?
No, it wasn't Randy. It was
Jean-Pron.
Jean-Pron. Yeah.
No wonder you didn't. No wonder you didn't get a chance.
And now and Freddie was one of the other goalies. Now I get to hang out with Freddie. But no, my beef was I used to date a girl in Winnipeg when I lived there, and she was in love with Scott Arneil, and she had commitment issues because she was in love with Scott Arneil, and I could never overcome the fame of Scott Arneil.
I'm a grandfather three times over. We're not even going down this road here. So I'm sorry. I don't want to know about your love life. So
she just it ruined the relationship because she couldn't get past Scott Arneil.
Next time you're on the ice with him, Scott, just aim for the mask. Forget the shoulder. Aim for the mask. Yeah.
He might have been. And he went over my shoulder. This has been fun. Thanks, buddy. And we're really happy and proud of you, your success. Obviously, I follow you. You're closer than a lot of people. And it's been great. And we wish you nothing but the best.
All right. Great, great talking to you guys. It's been a lot of fun. Thanks, fellas.
Glove up.
With the NHL app, you can listen to every NHL game right from your phone. And with home and away broadcast feeds, you choose your way to listen.
And he scores!
Whether you're at work, at the gym, or stuck in traffic, the NHL app puts you right in the action all season long. Every team, every game, everywhere you go. Download the NHL app and never miss a moment.
I feel better. I can't believe he was so ready with the scoring on me and the clapper, though, back in 1996-97 when the Moose came in. I went to training camp for CKND.
One of those one of those gimmicky things where the TV reporter.
But it wasn't gimmicky. I was good then.
And you probably thought you should make the team, too, probably.
Yeah. Vincent Riando and Freddie Brathwaite. They took the easy way out.
They
didn't take a chance.
Well, no, actually, I there was a time I didn't think Jean Perron was a very good coach, but now I have new respect for him.
For cutting me?
For cutting you.
that's pretty good. Interesting to hear him talk about Taves.
Oh, yeah. It's you know, I watch a lot of Jets games, and you almost wonder if people are still, you know, just giving Jonathan the benefit of the doubt on so many different things. But, you know, he's getting better every game, Darren. He's getting better every game. You can see it in him. But you wonder if people are being deferential. And that was the only concern I had is that, you know, because there is a great leadership group on that team. Scott kind of touched on it with Morrissey and with Lowry and Scheifele. But Jonathan Taves shows up. Jonathan Taves is on another level in so many ways and seems to have fit in perfectly.
And the experience must be such a help to the coaching staff. To be able to bounce some things off him, even if it's just in passing. And that will grow as the year goes on, I'm sure.
I'm sure you're right. Your question about load management's a fair one, though. You do wonder at a certain
And there's nothing wrong with that, right?
Nothing wrong with it, particularly when you look at the depth that the Jets have. Because when they're healthy, they have 15 quality forwards. Like the Cole Koepke and Tanner Pearson have done a really good job in coming in there. They got Vladislav Namestnikov playing on the wing, but he can play center. So they do have depth if they need to spell somebody off. Those three and four or back to backs.
He just missed so much time that why not be patient with them from a workload perspective this year? If JT plays the next 3 years, he'd be able to play every game. But this first year is almost like not starting over, but close to it.
Well, and what you really want, just like your goaltender, is you want him to be ready for the postseason. Mm-hmm. You want him to be contributing in the playoffs when his value, I think, will be, you know, amplified.
Hellebuck's on pace for another 60-game season. That's not changing. I ran the numbers and the pace, and it's exactly right there.
I know. And you tried it. I mean, I wish he played 55. I wish he just, but he doesn't want to. He wants to play all those games. He wants to play all those games.
Should he play all those games?
No. My opinion, no. And Scott's right about Eric Comrie. Eric Comrie's done a good job there. Eric Comrie has grown into being a very good second goaltender for the Jets. And he could carry a lot more of the load.
But I don't mind 60. I don't want 65.
Well,
mind 60.
All I know is that he's played 60 the last 2 years or 60 or more. And both playoffs, he has not been at his best.
I think that's between the years and getting
mine
through
or
that
his?
First round.
Mine or his?
His.
Okay.
And like just psychologically and getting through that St. Louis series, I'm anticipating a different Connor Hellebuck this year in the playoffs.
Well, to quote the famous Bob Cole, we will see.
He just had a way of saying it that nobody else could. I had this idea for a feature back in the day. I wanted players to say things the way Bob Cole enunciated them. And you told me, can't do it. Bob will think they're making fun of him.
Correct. That would be absolutely correct.
But it just would have been great to hear people try to say things the way Bob did, which was so unique, yet created drama where we will see. Like, who else can say that and create drama?
Well, I still remember that playoff series late in his career with the Blackhawks when he said, everything is happening. And people just clasped onto that and said, wow, that's something. Everything.
If I said that during the game, people go, what a goofy thing to say.
Yeah.
But he could enunciate it. I called him Bobby one time.
Would go over well, too.
He was fine with it. You know who had the biggest issue with it?
Me.
You. Yeah. I got a text right away. Bobby? ?
Yeah.
Bob was fine.
I called him Robert, so.
That was fun today. If you're ever out in Winnipeg, Gondola's Pizza. There you go.
Okay. How about Santa Lucia's?
That's good, too. Okay, but I've seen people take Gondolas on the plane flying out of there. People in Toronto or Vancouver transplanted Manitobans going, I'm taking my Gondolas back with me. Check it out. And Red Cactus may not be the hot spot anymore, but the Yellow Dog Pub. If you're ever around, go to the Yellow Dog. Say hi to my friend Greg, okay?
You're just trying to get a free beverage.
No, cousin Greg will treat you well.
Yeah, okay, I'll remember that.
There you go. There's a little Manitoba.
Thanks for we'll a bonus. Thank you for a bonus edition of 100%
Hockey.